I'm Mac. My name is Charles. Can y'all hear me in the back? I don't speak very loud. I'll try to speak up a little louder. I am truly grateful to be here and to be alive. I'm grateful to be alive today, you know. I'm grateful for the fellowship, Narcotic Anonymous, for giving me my life back, you know. When I came to the program, I was a lot younger than I am now, you know. The fellowship was new in our area. We didn't have the literature. And it really wasn't popular to be clean. My friends thought I was the snitcher, you know, because they said I was reading that snitcher's book. And because they didn't understand. I mean, we didn't know anybody that had ever stopped using. You're going to have to come up closer because I'm not really, you know, somebody can holler and loud, you know. I'm speaking loud if we had some amplification. Okay, but what I'm going to do is I'm going to keep talking to y'all. Come up close, okay? You know, this is the first time I've come out for the sunrise meeting. I mean, it's I don't get up this early unless I'm forced to, you know. But I'm glad I came out here. It's a beautiful day. The scenery is beautiful. All you nice people, I've already taken a picture, y'all, you know. Behind the scenes, you know, it's not no close-ups. You know, I wanted the background. It was just a beautiful sight, you know. But the theme is diversity is our strength. Diversity is our strength. When I first got here, we had very few women. My clean date is May 5th, 1980. And about 17 more days, I'll be acknowledging my 29th year. When I got here, I had no intentions on staying here this long. Now, seriously, because when I got here, you know, it really wasn't nothing wrong with me. Most of the people here had problems. And, you know, like the court seemed to think I had one. You know, so to satisfy the courts, I stayed here. And during that time, I found out that I really did have some problems. I really didn't like being here. I thought y'all were funny. I go to the meetings. Let me just say that I did everything that was suggested when I got here. I got a sponsor right away. I joined the home group right away. I got involved with service right away. I did everything that was suggested because I didn't think it would work. I said I'm going to do everything you people say do, and when it don't work, I was going to use. So for that reason, you know, like, I got involved and I did everything that was suggested. And against my will, I've been able to stay clean. It took me like 2 years to get to the point that I really wanted to be a part of this thing. You know, let me say that I started using at the age of 9. And when I found the Fellowship of Narcotic Anonymous, I was 31 years old. Narcotic Anonymous broke up over 20 years of active addiction. And like I said, I didn't think I had anything wrong, but y'all recognized that I did. Y'all told me, said, you know, like, you started using at such an early age, that you might want to stay here long enough to get a life so that you can compare that life with the life you led before you got here and then make a decision of whether or not you want to stay here. You know, so that's what I did. It took me about 2 years. During that time, we started a lot of meetings because when I first got here, it was only like 3 meetings in the D.C. area. And it couldn't have been too many more around the area because, you know, it just wasn't a lot of meetings. So we helped, you know, I helped start a lot of meetings, support those meetings. But it took me about 2 years before I realized that this is what I wanted. One day I woke up. And for the first time in recovery, I was afraid that I might use. And I started remembering the literature, the information that the same addict will use, and the steps will change you. And I hadn't really done, I started a lot of step meeting, but I hadn't done a lot of work in terms of the steps. And that's when I began to work the steps. And my life has improved in leaps and bounds since then, you know. My story is living proof that, you know, like any addict can get clean, stay clean, whether you want to or not, if you keep coming back. That's what I did, you know. That's the only thing that I did. I did the same thing that the people who wanted it did, and I got the same results. I remember in my early recovery, they used to come up to D.C. and take us to places like Richmond to share a meeting. Because we had to go from D.C., we were in like Baltimore, Richmond. We went all up down the East Coast to get the meetings. There just wasn't enough meetings. And I go to a meeting, and it looked like, just all types of people. I would go to a group where I would be the only black, and I would be scared. I'm a newcomer. I said they'd have tricked me. They got me down here. And then at the end of the meeting, they come up and they be hugging me and showing me love, and man, they want my number, and that was the beginning for me, you know, just knowing that the diversity of the love that we have in this fellowship. You know, the first convention that I went to, you see people from all over the world, the first world convention, you know, and all the different type of people. And understanding just how big this thing is. See, today, you know, I can go almost any place, and I can make a call before I go, and I can get a hookup wherever I'm going. Yeah, I mean, I can make a call here, and when I get to wherever I'm going, I can have a hookup there, because there's somebody in this crowd that knows somebody any place I could go. And That's beautiful. I just want to talk about when I came here, the type of person that I was when I got here. I guess I was just like most of y'all, you know. I was very cold and very callous. Like I said, I started using early, and I never stopped till I got here. I grew up on the street. Everything I learned was from the street. I didn't really care about people, you know. And it fills me up to think about, you know, try to conjure up the type of person that I was then, you know, like, you know, considering who I am today. I'm not gonna think about them. I'm not even gonna think about that, because I'm gonna tell you, I was one that I enjoyed what I was doing, you know. I didn't know any better, but I enjoyed it, man, you know. And today, just to think, you know, like how confused I was when I got here is something. I got a sponsor right away in my early recovery, and we went to meetings together, you know. I went over his house, and we sit down and we had dinner and we talked, and I was able to learn how to get honest with somebody that I didn't know, you know. And what it did for me is having that close guidance was a chance for me to check everything, you know, about myself. See, I would go to the meetings and I would laugh at y'all, you know, stories, because I mean, a lot of people come to meetings just to hear the stories. You know, and I leave out the meetings, you know, and I tell my sponsor, there's some sick people in there, you know. And he would say, yeah, I know, we just came out. And, you know, some of the people, in the beginning, some of the people that I thought I could really help were the ones that had the most time. They were the ones that sound the sickest to me. You know, because I had been gone to meeting for a year, and I saw this guy with, he had 10 years. I didn't know it then. But after hearing him share, for the first time in my life, I felt like there was somebody that I could really help, you know. So, and I really wanted to help him, but I found out that what he was sharing the way it was. Because that's how we do. We share what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. All I was hearing is what it was like, you know, and he had problems, you know, and I wanted to help him. And it took me a while to realize the time he had, and he was talking in past tense. But it's nice that if we can stay to some format where we share what it was like. What it was like for me, I spent a lot of time running around, taking from people, you know, taking from my family. I didn't really get to my mother. I never got to her yet. I hadn't gotten to her. but I did a lot of things. When I came here, you know, with all that pressure to use, to stay clean in that treatment center that I was in, because it was no violence in that treatment center. They had the rules were no violence and no threats of violence. So I didn't think I would be able to stay in there 6 months that it was going to be without using. I mean, without hurting somebody, right, or being hurt. And let's take a moment of silence, just a short moment of silence for me to gather my thoughts here, right? Thank you. I'm serious, you know. I'm just overwhelmed by the sound, the crashing sound of the ocean, and all you people, you know. Let me just tell you what it's like for me now, you know. Because I really didn't talk about a whole lot about, you know, like, what, you know, what it was like in the beginning. Because, you know, like, for me to go back that far and start pulling up that stuff, see, I like I said, I was stopped prematurely. I enjoyed getting high, you know, and I thought it was so unfair that I had to be, you know, forced to do this, you know. So in my story, you know, most people haven't heard me share what it was like. But I did everything y'all did, and probably more. You know, when I came here, you know, I got caught up in the whirlwind of recovery. You know, I like I said, I started the meet, helped start the meet, went to a lot of meets, two or three meets a day. I did that for like 3.5 years. Then I started going to one meeting a day. I was clean 5 years before I missed my first meeting. I was in the hospital with two broken legs from a motorcycle accident. And during that time in that hospital, I got a chance to work on the helpline, because I've been introduced to being in service in the fellowship. So no matter where we are in our recovery, there's something for us to do, you know. So I had plenty of time on my hands, so I would direct people to the fellowship, and I learned at that time that even if they cut my legs off, which they threatened to do for over a year, you know, I said even if I with no legs at all, you know, I felt that I was better off than most people that I was going to come in contact with on the streets, you know, because I was clean, you know, and with no legs at all, I still had a shot at life. When I got out of that, well, while I was there, the doctor came around, not the doctor, but the pastor came around, and he would pray for us, right, you know, so he would pray for me. And, you know, and by me sharing with this pastor, you know, every day that he would come by, he would bring a list of other people in need of prayer. See, you people had taught me how to pray, and y'all taught me how to rely on the God of my understanding in times of need and trouble. You know, so, you know, like they said that don't get used to the legs. We may have to cut them off. You know, you may never walk again, and all that stuff that they were saying, but I never believed that. you know, I was able to walk out of that hospital in 30 days. And they said that I would be in the hospital for 6 months. They said that I would walk with a limp. They said that I would never run. They said all these things that have not been true, you know, because you people have taught me that I could do anything I put my mind to. In order for me not to walk, they were going to have to cut the legs off, you know. Then even if they had done that, you know, I would still been mobile. You know, I still would have been able to get around, you know. And after that situation, I came out, and I just began to grow in leaps and bounds. You know, I want to say that my mother was able to come live with me before she passed. My mother died of cancer. And we, my wife and I, we nursed her for 2 years, you know, going through all the stuff, running her errands, running back and forth to the hospital. If it hadn't been for y'all, I wouldn't have been able to get through that. First of all, if it had not been for this fellowship, I wouldn't have been there for her during that time. I may not have even known she was sick. You know, I may have found out 2 weeks later that they had buried her. You know, y'all have heard the stories. You know, people come in and share these same things. But I was able to go through that. And it wasn't easy. The death of my mother was the hardest thing I've ever had to go through in recovery. The first 9 or 10 years of my recovery, nothing happened. You know, I guess things were happening, but God gives me what I need. You know, so I didn't even recognize that I was going through a whole lot of stuff. It was so much fun, you know, just being a part of this thing and doing new things, you know. But after my mother died, I mean, you know, like during her death, I was out of it, you know. My friends would call and check on me. My wife would put out the APB to all my sponsees to go, you know, check with your sponsor, you know. And I really thought that the program was still working the way it had worked before, you know, with people calling me because they need some help, you know. So I would try to help these guys when they called, you know. And it was months later that I found out, you know, the reason why they were calling me because I was the one in need, you know. And we're the last to know. You know, I can help everybody but myself, you know. But if we give it back the way it was given to us, you know, that help will come back to us when we need. If I train everybody that I work with, if I train them up to be men and women, that when I'm in need or when I'm down in my luck or when I'm in hardship, that even because I still don't have the ability to ask for help. I still don't have that ability to do it, you know, but my people know. They know when something's wrong. If I talk to you a certain way and all of a sudden my whole behavior's changed and I think that I'm acting normal, everybody know that, you know. But the closeness of this fellowship puts us in that situation, you know. You know, we're some of the luckiest people in the world, you know. Because of, you know, like just the diversity of this program, you know. I've had all kinds of friends. Now, when I first came in, I was scared of gay people because I thought they wanted me. Yeah. That's the bottom line. I thought I was just homophobic, you know. But as I grew up in this fellowship, it's because I thought they wanted me. So after I began to have friends who were gay, you know, and they saw me acting funny, they, you know, one of them told me, said, "Charles, every woman don't want you. Every gay person don't want you." Made sense to me, you know. And, you know, so I was able to, you know, like, continue to grow up and receive that help that I wouldn't have normally got. You know, when I cut off people because of the way they look or the way I see them, the way they dress or the way they talk or whatever it is that rubs me the wrong way, then I'm cutting off my help, you know. So, you know, like that's what makes us so blessed, you know, because I don't have to find a certain person to help me. You know, that if I could be honest enough to go to a meeting and just share what's going on with me, that I can get some help. And I can get some help whether they share it with me in that meeting or not. Because I've learned, my sponsor told me, he said, whenever you're in need, go to a meeting, talk about it. Because the meetings are spiritual in their nature. So whenever I go in need, you know, I always leave with the help that I went looking for. And to prove it to myself, I used to share in meetings. And when I finished sharing the meeting, people would come up to me and they say, Charles, I really enjoyed what you said. And they would go on and tell me what they thought I said that helped them. And it wouldn't be anything that I said. But they got the help that they needed. And they were so grateful for it. Talk to somebody else and they would share something else that I didn't say, you know. So I know for a fact that was proof to me that when we come to a meeting and we're in need, that we get what we need in the meeting. Because I sit up here and I share whatever it is I think I need to share. And God delivers whatever he needs to deliver. You know, it doesn't have a whole lot to do with me. You know, like my heart is right. You know, my mind is fixed. I want to help somebody. But I know I'm not capable. I know that the only thing I can do is stay clean. Try to help somebody else, you know, and that I can still continue to live. You know, I still try to do the same things that I did when I first came in. And we could do it from the time we get here. Let's go to a meeting, try to help somebody, especially when I think it ain't nothing wrong with me, which is most of the time, you know, that I can help somebody. Because I can see y'all when y'all suffering. You know, I know when y'all having problems. So, you know, for me to reach out and try to help you, it takes me out of my own situation. When I'm reaching out to somebody who I think is less fortunate than myself, and I share with them and try to get them out of their misery, then I'm the one that receives the help. My sponsor told me something a long time ago that's made sense over the years. He said that, I thought he was being arrogant. He said, you know, I have 100% success rate on my 12-step calls. And I, you know, then I listened to it, you know. And he said, yeah. He said, every time I do a 12-step call, I stay clean, 100%. You know. But that, because this is a selfish program, you know, that I want some benefits from it, you know. Like, and if I do the simple things, that I get the simple rewards, you know. And how much longer do I have? 30 minutes. 30 minutes. Okay, let me see. That's plenty of time. That's plenty of time. You know, I'm going to tell you what my topic was going to be when I woke up this morning was, why in the H am I going out here? On the beach, you know, because when I woke up this morning, I was still tired, and they didn't give me a topic, so I said, well, okay, you know, but I'll keep it real simple, you know, like, I keep losing my train of thought, you know, pray again, pray at work, I feel better just thinking about prayer, okay. When I came out on the beach, you know, it was only about 3 or 4 people, and I was running late. You know, I thought I was running late, and then I saw it, because I thought it was just going to be us, you know, me and the 3 or 4 people that I saw, because of the way I was feeling when I got out here, you know. And to see all these people out here, all my friends and all the friends that I haven't met yet, you know, man, it's just awesome. Now, see, what I want to share about now is I'm gonna talk about the treatment facility that I went in. I'm just gonna discuss that for a minute, because that's where I got a lot of the information to start me out. It was a 6-month program, and when I it was 30 of us in there, and that out of that 30 people, they said it would only be like 3 of us that'll get clean. They said out of that 3, they said in 5 years, one of y'all, one of the three would use. Out of the treatment center that I went in, the group of people that I came out with, there's got to be about 7 of us clean today. There have been 2 or 3 of us who've died clean. And what we were able to do is let the fellowship know that, you know, the statistics are made to be broken. Because my belief is that anybody can get clean. You know, anybody can get this and stay clean. You know, my own story, like I said, you know, attest to that. You know, that when somebody is in need of help, that's when we need to be there. You know, I tell the guys that I sponsor, you know, like that we gather up this information, you know, for the tough time. It's not hard for me to be clean this moment. You know, I'm not thinking about using. I'm not caught up. All that information stuff is not necessary right now. All I have to do is enjoy the moment. But when my back's against the wall, then what am I going to do? I got to be able to make that call. You know, so we have to encourage the newcomers to try those new things, those new radical things. Call somebody, you know. Call somebody before you use. You know, I tell them, I say, look, if you still feel like using, you can do that after the call. You know, but give yourself a chance. You know, make the call, see what happens. In my experience, that every time I call, no matter what I think my problem is, when I get off the phone, I feel better. Most of the time, because the people that I call, after I dump on them, they tell me what's going on with them, and then I don't feel bad about my situation at all. You know, because my I'm gonna tell you though, the things that I complain about in my life, most of y'all wish y'all had. My complaints are blessings. You know, anything that I would complain about would be a blessing to most people. You know, but being a complainer, you know, I gotta find something to complain about. So this program is just giving us everything we need. You know. I'm blessed to have, you know, like guys in my life who could sponsor me. You know, a lot of the guys that I sponsor could be my sponsor. Most of the guys that I started sponsoring in my early recovery, they were smarter than me. Their head was a little more straighter than mine. They knew why they were here. But God had me sponsor them, you know. And I look back on my early recovery and think about how it was in the beginning, and I know that there is a God, you know, because there's no way in the world that the way I was when I came in that I could have possibly helped anybody, you know. But that just goes to what I was saying in the beginning, that, you know, all I do is go through the motion. You know, I stay here, I try to help somebody. God uses my words to help other people. God puts, because God speaks to your heart. You know, I be speaking and I speak to your mind, but God delivers something straight to your heart. You know, I come in here, I've learned how to pray and meditate. You know, I was taught to pray. The way I was taught to pray when I got here was, you know, they said that when you get up in the morning, before you go to bed at night, they say, want you to get down on your knees and slide your shoes way up under the bed. And say, and just thank him. Thank God while you're down there on your knees. And if you're anything like me, when I got here, I only had one pair of shoes. So he said, you're going to find yourself down on your knees in the morning. And while you're down there, you just say, God, help me make it through the day without a drink or drug. So that was my prayer for years. And I did it every day. And from the time I got out of treatment to now, I have never really wanted to use. You know, I don't know when the desire really left or anything. But I mean, you know, like for years, I got caught up and I never thought about using. I was always thinking about the next day. What were we going to do the next day, you know? Because I would meet up with my friends after work at the NA club. We would go to meetings. We'd come back to the club. We'd go out to eat, and, you know, like by the time I would get to bed, it was 11, 12 o'clock at night. So I never really had time to think about using. I was going to so many meetings till I made excuses for any other good thing that I needed to do for myself. You know, the meetings were the excuse why my house wasn't clean. You know, I go too many meetings to do that. You know, why I haven't done any step work. Well, you know, I'm in too many meetings to do that. You know, I mean, my going to meetings were the excuse for everything, but my sponsor would take all those away. You know, he would tell me, well, pick a day and don't go. So that's how I was able to get started writing my steps. On Monday, I wouldn't go to a meeting. And I'd sit there. And then I start calling all my friends who were in meetings. And I would pray and I'd sit there, you know. And it was a couple of days, you know. The first day I just wrote procrastination. And I just sit there. But after a while I was able to, you know, because I kept doing it because that's what I was suggested to do. And on Monday, I was able to get through writing out my fourth step. because, you know, like I just took that time by suggestion. Just sit down and stop making excuses. I learned how to keep my house clean. I learned how to go home and be home by myself. You know, a whole lot of things I learned, you know, just by, you know, following suggestions. I'm one that if I wasn't going to follow suggestions, I wouldn't talk to my sponsor about something that I wasn't willing to do. You know, if it was something that I really wanted to do, because I've been there, you know, I wouldn't share it. Because, you know, I didn't want my sponsor to think that I'm not following his suggestions. I was just afraid that if I didn't follow suggestions, they would stop giving them, you know. So whenever I got a suggestion, I did it. Because in the beginning, I didn't think it would work anyway, you know, and I was willing to give it a few days just to prove it out. But everything, I was never given any bad information. In the beginning, a lot of my role models, the guys who really helped me, a lot of them used. But they gave up a lot of good information before they left, you know. And I took on the attitude that I'll just learn how to walk the walk that I heard y'all talking, because a lot of times I just thought they just talking. They just talking that stuff, you know. But I learned to live those things. And as a result of just walking that walk that I heard y'all talk, you know, I was able to get clean and stay clean. I was able to, you know, go through the ridicule. Because y'all, you know, in the beginning, I don't know if they're doing it now, but they made me feel bad for living the program. You know, they tell me all the right things to do, and then when I do it, they say, he think he something. You know? You know, he think he N.A. guru, you know? But, I mean, I was just basically doing what was suggested, you know? And I think there need to be more N.A. gurus. You know, I think we need to set that example, you know, because we got young members looking up to the hip, cool people who not doing nothing but just hanging around, and they may or may not be clean, you know. And we give them plenty of opportunity to speak loud and influence the younger population. And then kids grew up, I'm calling newcomers kids, they grow up in this program believing that that's what it's about. You know, yeah, I did. Because if I'm a newcomer and I see you working the door, collecting the money for an event, and if I see that money going in your pocket and I see some other older member not challenging you, then I want to work the door next year. You know? So what we're going to have is people growing up teaching the other people that's the way it is. When I came up, you know, like I saw my sponsor argue with somebody at the counter because they had given him too much money. And he was trying to convince those people, look, I'm just trying to give you this money back because, you know, you gave me too much money. See, those were the kind of examples that I got. You know, so even though I'm thinking Yeah, right. I'm not gonna be doing that, you know. Even though I was thinking that this not what I'm gonna do, I was able to do it. One day I was coming from a meeting, going back to work. I had $2 or $3 in my pocket because I had my first job, that was the minimum wage one, and I didn't have a lot of money. I saw this guy with money hanging out his pocket. So the whole time I'm behind him, I'm like, man, I can get that. I can get that money out of his pocket. You know, but I didn't touch it. You know, I sit there and I got my little whatever it was. I didn't get much to eat. But I thought about it the whole time I was behind him. I just take this money. On the way out, he was in front of me walking down the street, and his money fell out of his pocket. Before it hit the ground, I said, hey, you drop your money. See, that was not me. And after I said it, I'm like, what the? What was that? What was that all about? I had to talk about that thing when I went to meetings, you know. But I mean, you know, what I'm saying is that if we're trained right, if we see the right example, whether we want to or not, this is what we're going to do. You know, this is what we're going to do. You know, so I just thank God for the people who were in my life that trained me up, that taught me to get involved with service, you know, to help somebody, whether I like them or not. Because, you know, I have the ability to do that. You know, I don't even have to like you. Matter of fact, I have talked about people like we all do. You know, and the next day, I was charged to help them. You know, and nobody would ever know that I didn't like that person. You know, I was able in the beginning to see, you know, like the literature say, you know, like two people who don't agree on anything come together to help somebody that's suffering. Because, you know, like that's the way we're trained. You know, whether we like it or not, you know, like we just like our kids, you know. When I'm raising my kids, I can tell them anything I want to. But if I show them a good example, that's the one that they're going to follow. You know, whenever I used to want to fuss at my kids about their room being nasty, I go straight to my bedroom. I go to my bedroom first. I straighten up my room. When I go in, I say, what is all this stuff? You know, that's what I do. But I learned that here, you know. I learned that the example is better than the words, you know. And that's what we need more of. I mean, you know, like we really need to be mindful of the newcomer. Really need to be mindful of the newcomer. I mean, you know, some of the older members might get together and laugh and joke about some things, but if there's some young ears around, we need to pay attention to what we're saying. You know, we really do. Because I don't like the way I see some things going in some of the meetings. No, I'm not talking about the format. I'm not talking about the readings or anything like that. I'm just talking about some stuff that I see going on before and after the meeting. I'm gonna share this one little incident, and it happened about 10 years ago. And the new member didn't know, because after that he changed his whole life. But it was at halftime. We were making announcements, you know, anniversaries, and the NA convention events coming up. And this guy said, "I want to announce a crab feast." So he announced a crab feast. That wasn't NA. We was waiting. It could have been an NA announcement. But at the end of it, he said, "Then all the beer you can drink free." You know, it's like 20, I forgot what the price was, but all the beer free, you know. And so we told him, say, hey, that's not an NA announcement. And we didn't beat him up then, and we didn't beat him up after. But after that, we went over to talk to him and said, you know, like, that's not an NA announcement. And you know, we don't condone drinking beer. You know, we talked to him because he was feeling bad then. I mean, he was feeling good at first. His sponsor was putting on the event. You know, so he was just doing what his sponsor had him doing. And after that, you know, like, he got a new sponsor. But I mean, you know, if nobody challenged that, I mean, he would have grown up in this fellowship. I mean, because I don't know if his sponsor was drinking or not, but he was putting on an event. And the next time I saw that guy, he, like I said, he had a different sponsor, and he was feeling better because you could see it in his eyes. He was so hurt, you know, after making an announcement like that, you know, with us. And then, you know, like then understanding, you know, like how he got caught up in his sponsor's thing, you know, that could have ran him out. You know, I'm also going to ask that you be mindful in some of these special meetings that we have, you know, like what do they call them? Okay, you know, I'm talking about men's rap and women's rap, stuff like that, you know. That, you know, there's controversy whether or not it's even an NA meeting because they're not all inclusive. You know, that I've had the opportunity to be in a men's rap when a woman come in, and if a woman comes in a men's rap while I'm there, then we're changing the whole format of that meeting. You know, because, you know, like, that's just the way it's supposed to be. I mean, you know, like anybody's supposed to be able to come in and feel welcome. I can't tell a newcomer that, well, you know, like this is a men's rap. If you go down the street, you know, one block, there's a woman's rap or there's a meeting that you can go to right there, you know, because that may be their first meeting. That's why I don't like those type of meetings. We know, because when you get newcomers who don't know, and a lot of times there's going to be some new people operating those meetings. You know, we set it up and we walk away. Now the newcomers got it. And as soon as the woman come in there and they look at it and be like, hey, you can't come in here. This is a men's rapping so-and-so. If that's their first greeting at an NA meeting, they not going no place else. They're never going to walk through a door of NA again. I know I wouldn't. You know, but I've seen that happen. I've seen it happen. And, early in my recovery, there's few people here to know that I used to go to women's rap. I used to go to them, you know. And when I go in, it would be just like I said. They'd jump up and start hollering stuff, you know. And I would calmly say, is this an NA meeting? They say, yeah. I say, well, y'all, you can't put me out. I sit down, you know. And it would be disruptive to that meeting, but I was trying to make a point. The point is that there are going to be some people coming in. The gay people don't stop you from coming in if it happened to be a gay meeting. They just look at me a little funny, you know. But they don't tell me to get out, you know. So we have to be mindful. I'm just putting these things out there because it is so much that we need to be mindful because we influence so many people. And we don't know the impact that we have on it because most of the people come up to me and say, Charles, man, I'm so glad to see you. You know, I still remember what you said to me. It was in 19, so-and-so. I'd be like, what do you say? They tell me, and I'm telling you, it's nothing that I ever said. Or if it's something that I said, you know, I don't remember it. You know, but it impacts their life. It impacts their life, you know. The things that people shared to me to help me the most, you know, when I tell them, they don't remember that stuff. Because, you know, they just doing their best they can to help somebody. But when you got somebody that's dying and looking for something to hold on to, when you say it to them, they grab it. And that's it. So we have to make sure that we let them know, you know, to help somebody less fortunate than you. That's what it's about. You know, you come in, you was here yesterday, help somebody. You know, that person just coming in. They don't even know. And I've been witness to see that. You know, somebody, one week, they sitting there all quiet and sad, you know, and then the next day, they recognize a newcomer. They done been to 3 or 4 meetings. They know that person haven't been here before, you know, and they go, oh, welcome, come on in, man. This thing works, man, you know, and, you know, help them get a seat and show them how to get involved, you know, straighten out a chair, pick up some chairs, and stay around after the meeting to talk to somebody. Don't run away. Get to know some of these people. We have to show them how to do that. You know, my wife is professional. She's a professional. She's the last person to leave any meeting. Last person. Every time we get ready to leave, I say, come on, let's leave so these people can go home. You know. They won't leave till she leaves. You know. But that's how it works, you know. We stay around here and we get involved. The meeting after the meeting. I try to get early. I try to get there early and try to stay late. With the time that I have, I'm still 90%, I'm still the first person in my home group. Still the first person there. And before the second person get there, I've got half the chairs set up. And sometimes I can have the whole place set up before they get there. That's my service. You know, right now I don't get involved with area service because I'm old and stale. I don't have no new ideas. And I think a lot of the older people need to, if they're going to be involved with that stuff, just be there supervisory, you know. You know, and not interfere so much. Not try to interject all that old stuff in there, you know. Because all I'm going to do is, you know, tell you what you can't do. And y'all want to know what you can do. You know, so I try not to get involved in that. But I've done it all. You know, I've done, you know, almost anything in service. You know, but I know when to leave, and I've had to get some of the guys that I sponsor, because it's so hard to give up your position. You know, it become your meeting, it become your area service, it become your region. I mean, you personally. I mean, you know, it's like that's it. You know, and then I've had to go to my guys, and I go to the groups or whatever that I would apologize for him. And say, but he's not going to be able to serve anymore. Because, you know, we get there and then we become as much trouble as we are good. Yeah, we can give points of information, but if we don't know how to do that and keep the atmosphere of recovery, then we don't need to be there. So that's why I don't go. See, in my early recovery, I was really working on some things, so it would have been hard to get me to react a certain way, because I was conscious of all those things. You know, I was a very violent person, so, you know, nobody knew it. Y'all don't believe it today, you know, but I knew I was, so, you know, that's what I was working on. So it would have been hard to get me to do something stupid. You know, today, I haven't worked on that stuff in a long time. My patience and tolerance isn't what it used to be. If I find myself in some strenuous situation, I don't know how I'll react. I really don't. I know that in a lot of situations that are not healthy for me, I don't have to be a part of it. But if I hear or find out about something going so wrong, I'll show up, you know, to be supportive, make points of information. But I'm one that know how to follow directions. I know how to follow directions from my group or whatever committee it is I'm serving on. I don't have to like what our group decide to do, but if that's what we decide to do and I'm the one that's supposed to relay that information or to execute that information, I better know how to do it with a smile. You know, I got to learn how to do it with a smile. You know, I don't need to be running around here talking about they got me doing this and that and it ain't right and this and that. Well, you know, step down. Let somebody can do it with a smile get up there, you know. You know, let somebody show an example, because I heard about an incident the other day where, you know, some newcomers went to area service and they didn't see what they liked. They don't want to even be in service anymore. Now, y'all know how difficult it is to train somebody up to want to be in service. You know, everybody not going to do it. You know, and to have somebody show up and then be just discouraged by what they see. You know, that they don't even want to show up and help anymore. It's a shame, you know. But you only got yourself to blame. We only got ourselves to blame because we let this stuff happen. That's right. You know, we know that certain people going to do certain things. We put them involved and put them in charge anyway. See, when we have, when we vote on stuff, we should do it like we did in the old days. You volunteer for something, okay, leave the room. We have discussion. You know, that way you don't have to worry about them looking at you saying, well, he talked about me like that. Yeah, somebody need to talk about you like that. You know, send him out the room and say that'd be like giving him a loaded pistol. you know, you don't want to put this in his hand. Somebody need to say it. You know, and everybody already know it. That's the kicker. Everybody already know it. But instead of saying something or doing something about it, we put them involved and have them running away the newcomers and running away the old timers and running away anybody that don't want to be around that kind of spirit. You know, so the good news is we can change all that. I mean, I'm sure it's happening in every area because it's a good problem. The problem is that the fellowship has just grown so fast. You know, that's all it is. It's just grown so fast that when, you know, you got young people doing stuff, you know, and they doing it without any adult supervision, you know, in the home group, and on the area level, and on all levels. They just doing it without any role models. And they saying, well, you know, each group is autonomous because they learn enough to know that we can use this information to kill ourselves, you know. And that's enough of that, you know. That's always been, you know, like that kind of stuff's always been my pet peeve, you know, because, you know, my home group members know that I don't share a lot in the meetings, you know, because like I said, ain't much wrong with me. You know, I ain't gonna be in there crying about stuff that ain't really happening, you know. So I sit in there and listen. I sit up front and I listen, you know. But when you start talking about changing some stuff that's been working perfectly, you know, and creating a whole bunch of stuff that I know 2 or 3 months from now you're not even gonna be a part of, then you'll get a reaction from me. You know, I sit in the meeting and I try to let somebody else answer the questions that's being asked by a newcomer, because I've learned over the years that I'm not the only one with the information, that if I just shut up, somebody else will say it. Because there was a time that I said everything. I had to help everybody. You know, I talked real fast because I had a whole lot to say. And today I've learned that I don't have all the answers, then anybody can help, you know, if I give them a chance, you know. So we wind it down. I've been given the 5-minute notice. I hope I help somebody, but I know y'all have certainly helped me today by showing up, because if I had been out here with the 3 people that I thought I was going to be talking to, I'm pretty sure it would have been a different message, and we probably wouldn't have been able to sell the tape. I want to thank y'all for coming out. Thank you.